On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Americans overwhelmingly say they oppose the war in Iraq, but the war in Iraq goes on. So where's the anti-war movement? Well, all over and nowhere. It's in Congress among Democrats and some Republicans. It was in the streets of Washington, D.C. this weekend with a few thousand protesters chanting and marching. It was in the rhetoric in Iowa at Senator Tom Harkin's steak fry. But where's the beef? Last week belonged to Petraeus and Bush. Today we hear from the anti-war crowd. Up next on Point, Iraq war opposition from the halls of Congress to the streets and whether it packs any punch. We will hear today from the halls of Congress and from different stripes of the anti-war movement. Joining me first is Brian Becker, National Coordinator for the Answer Coalition and one of the chief organizers of Saturday's anti-war demonstration in the Capitol. Brian Becker, thanks very much for being here.
Thanks for having us, Tom.
And with us from Washington, Congressman Chris Van Hollen, Democrat from Maryland and chairman of the party's Congressional Campaign Committee. He has vowed to produce a change in the direction of the war and to turn up the pressure on Republicans to get anti-war measures through Congress. Congressman Van Hollen, thank you very much for joining us.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Brian Becker, let me come first to you. You had your people in the streets on Saturday. Thousands were there. They were also pro-war demonstrators. Were you satisfied with the turnout?
Well, the turnout was huge. It's been fairly underreported in the media. The Associated Press reported many tens of thousands. Our own estimate was about 100,000. The pro-war crowd, which is really just a small group, was about 750 to 1,000 people, although the media then presented it as if there were dueling demonstrations. We had 5,000 people led by Iraq war veterans who participated, as you mentioned, in a symbolic die-in leading to 200 arrests. And that die-in took place not at the White House, but at the Capitol building, because as we marched from the White House, we recognized that without the Democratic majority-led Congress continuing to fund the war, to authorize the war, to not end the war, the Bush administration cannot go forward. So we consider the Democrats to be complicit with the war. The people are angry. There's a reason that congressional approval rating has dipped almost as low or perhaps even lower than President Bush's at a time when the country has turned against the war. The people probably voted for the Democrats largely in order to send a message that they wanted the war ended, not in 2009, not in 2010, but right away. And clearly this war is going to drag on, and I believe it'll go on for decades or at least 9 or 10 years unless the people of this country take matters into their own hands, as we did during the Vietnam era, because I really don't expect that the Democrats will do anything except to capitulate or rubber stamp the Bush program.
Brian Becker of the Answer Coalition, they organized the anti-war demonstrations in Washington, D.C. on Saturday. Congressman Chris Van Hollen, you chair the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. Rahm Emanuel had that post until recently. You're right on top of what the Democrats are doing and hope to do. You hear the man, the voice from the streets here saying, you're not doing enough. You've capitulated. How do you see the Democrats' opposition to the war now? Is there traction somewhere? Or what about the charge of cooperation capitulation?
Well, there's been no cooperation. It's very important to keep the pressure on in Congress, as the marchers did. It's also important to keep the pressure on in every congressional district around the country, especially the congressional districts of the Republicans. Look, when we sent a bill to the president that would have changed the course of war, at that time only two Republicans in the House of Representatives supported the package. We need to make sure that we pulled the pressure up on Republicans. The fact of the matter is Speaker Nancy Pelosi has been opposed to the war in Iraq from day one. She's absolutely committed to changing the direction in the war. She has been working hard to get the Democrats to do that. And the fact of the matter is we did send a bill to the president that would have established a timetable. He vetoed that bill. We didn't have the votes to override it because Republicans continued to vote in lockstep with the president. We do not yet have a total majority to vote for what Senator Edwards was calling for, which is to say that the funds can only be used to bring our safe troops home safely, redeploy our combat forces by a date certain with a timetable. We certainly have a majority of Democrats for that, but we do not have a majority in the Congress. So we're continuing to work within the constraints that we face, given the fact that the Republicans continue to vote in lockstep with the president. Now, the fact that Susan Collins and Senator Warner and others have raised questions and suggested they may be willing to change course, is hopeful. But until they all start voting the way they are talking, it's going to be very difficult to muster the majority.
Brian Becker with Answer. There's the Congressman Van Hollen, and he says, look, get real. We don't have the votes. We the Democrats in Congress, we're doing all we can. What do you say to that?
Well, I think the congressman's position is disingenuous. There was a reason anti-war activists actually sat in his office in March. The fact of the matter is this, and these are the facts, and I think the facts are important here. On March 23rd, the vote he's alluding to, the majority in Congress voted for a phased withdrawal of Iraq, of troops from Iraq. That would have left 70,000 to 80,000 troops in Iraq a year from now, and that's what they call the phased withdrawal. They also authorized $100 billion for more funding. President Bush vetoed a version of that bill on May 1st, and then the same Democrat-led Congress, including Nancy Pelosi, engineered a new vote so as to authorize another $120 billion, that's $2 billion every week, to fund the Iraq war, and to let that go until the end of this fiscal year. The reason we were marching in such large numbers on Saturday in Washington, D.C., is that we recognize that each time Bush tries to borrow time against the popular will of the people, the Democrats keep extending the 3 months and keep saying, we don't have the votes. They, in fact, have the power of the purse.
But what would you do? Would you have them cut off funding for the troops while the troops are in the desert, in the field, in Iraq?
Yeah, absolutely, because as the Iraq war veterans who led the demonstration on Saturday say, funding the war is killing the troops. They keep trying to say that the funding of the continued war, the war that's taking 100 more American lives and thousands of Iraqi lives every month, if you don't fund them, then you're not supporting them. But all the funding is doing is taking more and more people to their lives in a criminal endeavor that should have never happened and that must be ended right now.
Congressman Van Hollen, what about it? Funding the war is killing the troops.
He's got to get his facts straight. The fact of the matter is we had a vote on an amendment offered by Congressman Jim McGovern of Massachusetts, which I strongly supported, that said the funds can only be used for the purpose of safely redeploying our forces and let a few troops stay for other missions. Speaker Pelosi, voted for that provision. I voted for that provision. A great majority of Democrats, but not every Democrat, voted for that provision, and virtually every Republican voted against that provision. The fact of the matter is, under our constitutional system, we need a majority. And to suggest that it's the Democrats that are somehow standing in the way of ending this war, instead of focusing on the fact that Republicans continue to vote in lockstep with the president, is just to train your fire in the wrong place.
What are you planning now, Congressman? If you could describe for us what's coming up in the week or weeks ahead in Congress on the war.
Well, we're going to try and press in through every avenue possible to change the direction of this war, to change the course of the war, and to bring our troops home.
Can you get more specific?
As safely as possible. Yeah. Well, there are a number of alternatives that are being looked at on the Senate side. You've got Senator Webb has offered a proposal that would require a change in the length of troop deployments. We in the House will, I'm sure, reconsider an amendment very similar to that offered by Congressman Jim McGovern of Massachusetts. And it would be very good if we got the pressure on members of Congress to get the votes. But again, we had a strong majority of Democrats favoring that. We did not have every single one, but we had maybe one or two Republicans who supported that. So if you look at the math of this, the fact of the matter is if we want to bring our troops home safely, as we all do, and those of us on the Democratic side have been pushing to get it done soon, we need to build pressure on Republican members of Congress. Now, the comments that are coming out of senators on the Republican side have been hopeful. But again, until people start voting the same way they're talking, it's going to be very difficult to muster a majority.
Do you see a real change before the vote of 08? Is it going to take some change in the makeup of Congress to make a real change in the war, in your view?
Well, I think what we have to do is keep the pressure on now to get people to change their mind. Look, the fact that the president's policy will now result in having the same number of troops in Iraq next summer as we had this past February, in other words, over 130,000 troops, where we're essentially running a circle while more men and women are killed in Iraq, is not something that the people of this country support. And I believe that the fact that we have another election coming up will continue to drive pressure on the Republican members of Congress, especially, to come around. But we need to build that pressure, and we need to make sure it's focused in the right place, which is why at the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee this August, we focused on running ads in a number of congressional districts around the country, Republican members of Congress who had said that they don't support the president's policy, but who had continued to vote with them.
We're joined as well now from Greensboro, North Carolina, by Congressman Howard Coble, Republican congressman from North Carolina, one of the first Republicans to break ranks on the war in Iraq. Way back in January of 2005, he was talking about getting out. Congressman Coble, thanks very much for joining us.
Good to talk to you, Tom.
What do you see going on in Congress here? Democrats say we've done about as much as we can until more Republicans come over. Are they coming?
Well, Tom, when you said I broke ranks, I guess I was probably the first Republican back in January 2005 to indicate that we should not abandon the opportunity of troop withdrawal. And I never did suggest a date, but at the time when I said that, Tom, no one was even remotely considering troop withdrawal.
Duly noted. What about now, sir?
Well, I'm disappointed, and I'll admit I'm playing Monday morning quarterback now, but I'm disappointed that there appears to have been no formulation of a post-entry strategy after Saddam was removed. Now, I'm confident that Saddam Hussein was an international terrorist, and I think it was not inappropriate to remove him. But by golly, I wish we had had a post-entry strategy, and I think there was none. I was one of 17 Republicans who voted against the surge. I was not convinced that the surge would have served a good purpose. Now, fast forward to last week, I think General Petraeus and the ambassador are both credible people. And based upon the information they conveyed last week, it appears that the surge probably is working more favorably and more effectively than I thought.
So are you with the president now and the plans that he outlined on Thursday night?
Well, Tom, I'm not sure that I am. I'm not sure that I'm not. And I know that sounds like a typical politician's answer, but I want to keep my powder dry for the moment. But I still believe the longer we're there, the more dependent the Iraqis are going to rely upon us.
Do you think that Republicans are going to join with Democrats to tip a change in policy before the elections next fall, 08, Congressman?
Well, that's a fair question, Tom, and I think an answer for me to that this today would be premature. I look forward to seeing what I go. I'm going back to Washington today, and I look forward to visiting with some of my colleagues, both Republican and Democrat, because I think there's no doubt in my mind that most Americans would like to see our men and women come home sooner rather than later, and I'd say put me in that category as well.
Congressman Coble, stand by Brian Becker with the Answer Coalition. Do you see help on the way from the GOP?
No, I don't, and I think the politicians, including the congressmen, are speaking as typical politicians. They're saying things aren't going well. They see that the occupation isn't being properly managed. They're giving credit to David Petraeus's report. They're basically not doing anything to heed the will of the people of this country, which is to bring the troops home. If the war, and to bring them home now, if the war was wrong, and it is wrong, if it was illegal, if it was an unprovoked attack against a country that was at peace with the United States, that had nothing to do with September 11th, if it was all basically based on false rationales and shifting and now discredited lies, then there's no reason that young men and women should be sent and killed and to kill or be killed in a war that's wrong. If the war is wrong now, it should be ended now. If it's wrong, it's unconscionable that this Congress, the Democrats and the Republicans alike, would fund another $120 billion, which is what's likely to happen in the next 2 weeks, so that thousands of more American service members and many hundreds of thousands of Iraqis will die in a war that should have never, ever happened.
Yeah,
and that's why
that.
Congressman,
I want to get your response to that, but I want to begin taking our calls first, if I may. A lot of people want to join this conversation. Let's go first to Tallahassee, Florida. And Bob, you're on the air.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
Yeah, the reason why Democrats are so hesitant to take on Bush with a full funnel movement is the same reason why the media rolled over and played dead for the first 3 years of the war.
And what's that?
The Republican attack machine is very effective in labeling anyone who opposes the war as un-American, unpatriotic, and even traitor. Tonight, if you turn on and listen to right-wing talk radio or right-wing talk TV, otherwise known as Fox News, you will hear O'Reilly and Hannity and all those other guys calling any Democrat unpatriotic for wanting to bring the troops home, and they're very, very effective in what they do.
Bob, let us pick it up. Congressman Coble, how about it first for you personally? Have you had your own party come after you for your suggestion of withdrawal as un-American, unpatriotic?
Well, no one's accused me of being unpatriotic. I took a little heat when I first came out 2.5 years ago, emphasizing the significance of troop withdrawal. But the other gentleman, not the caller from Tallahassee,
yes.
Tom,
mm-hmm.
but the other gentleman said that I was giving great credence to General Petraeus' report. I'm giving great credence to General Petraeus' credibility. I think he and the ambassador both came to Capitol Hill generously laced with credibility.
But the Republican National Committee has called opponents of the war, has described them as advocating surrender in Iraq. You know what the caller, Bob in Tallahassee, is talking about. There's pretty fierce denigration of people who stand up against this war by some in the right wing of your party. What do you say to that? Is that right? Is that correct?
I think it's mighty easy to do that. I think that's probably unfair as a general matter to accuse a person who's... Well, Ron Paul's a good example. Ron Paul, a Republican congressman from Texas, since day one has said we shouldn't have gone, and I don't call him unpatriotic for taking that stand, nor do I accuse other Democrats for that. And by the same token, though, Tom, I don't think that the Democrats who are adamantly opposed to the war, I don't think they should accuse Republicans who are in favor of the war of being... bloodthirsty, etc.
Yeah, let's go to a call from Luke. You're on the air with Congressman Howard Coble and Brian Becker of Answer.
Hi, thank you. I think it's interesting that the Democrats seem to be so politically cowed by this idea that they will be attacked ruthlessly for trying to end the war when that's what the great majority of the American people want. And if they just simply don't vote to fund the war, I know they don't have enough votes to overcome a veto, but they do have a majority. So they set the table, they chair the committees, they determine the agenda. If they don't vote for funding, then there will be no more war. They won't be able to go on missions. They'll have to take the troops home. And the American people are smart enough to know that doesn't mean that the Democrats are going to go out there and take the guns away from our soldiers and going to leave them out there without body armor, which the administration already did on its own. So I think they need to give the American people more credit than they are.
Luke, we've got that. Congressman, we've just got you for another second.
Okay. Are you
afraid to say your piece on this? As a Republican, we'll get to Democrats.
Oh, no, I'm not afraid to do that. But as the caller, I think, just implied, the difficulty in cutting off funds is the fact that you're leaving our men and women there in a more vulnerable position.
Yeah, Congressman Howard Coble, an early advocate of withdrawal from Iraq, Republican, joining us today from Greensboro, North Carolina. Congressman, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
Brian Becker, stand by. I want to bring another voice into this conversation from Washington. Tom Andrews joins us. He's National Director of Win Without War, coalition of more than 40 organizations, including MoveOn.org, the National Council of Churches, the NAACP. He's a former congressman from Maine, where he represented the first congressional district for two terms. Tom Andrews, thanks for joining us.
Tom, thanks for having me.
You hear our caller, Luke, in Savannah, Georgia, saying the Democratic Party is afraid to step up and oppose this war as strongly as it should. Do you see that fear?
Yes, I do. There's a lot of fear out there, and it's been reflected in what we've been hearing today. There was a story last week in the Washington Post talking about Democratic leaders in Congress saying that they're going to shift course and they're going to pursue what they call modest bipartisan measures, using incremental changes as opposed to the kind of aggressive types of approaches that we've been hearing from in this conversation. And I think it's a real mistake. For example, you mentioned Susan Collins at the beginning of the show,
mm-hmm.
and Chris Van Hollen, Congressman Van Hollen, described her bill as hopeful. Well, I don't think it's hopeful. The only reason that we're seeing a bill coming from her that would change the mission, quote-unquote, is because of political pressure. And what's happening is that Republicans and Democrats, many Democrats, are trying to find political cover. So they're trying to find measures, legislation, amendments that actually will do nothing, but will give the appearance of doing something. And by doing that, they're going to give themselves political cover. Now, there's two problems with that.
Mm-hmm.
One, you can manipulate those laws in any number of ways, as we've seen the administration do, so things get worse, not better, as we've seen during the surge. And number two, it could have the effect of taking away the only means that we have of ending this war, and that's political pressure. So I don't see that as hopeful at all. I see that as a big problem. And if the Democratic leaders are going to start embracing those kind of measures, I think that we're in this in Iraq for a very, very long time.
Well, let's talk about aggressive opposition. Answer, Brian Becker's group was out in the streets in Washington over the weekend. There have been street demonstrations against this war, but nothing like we saw in Vietnam. Are you taking a sufficiently aggressive position for an anti-war group, or are you going for a more, I don't know, a different approach than we saw in Vietnam?
I think we have to, Tom, frankly, turn up the heat. I'm of the school that there are many, many ways that we can bring pressure to bear, putting people on the streets in Washington, D.C. and in the major cities. Demonstrations of various kinds are very important. We've had thousands and thousands of people during the course of August in congressional districts all across the United States putting pressure on members of Congress. We have a series of national security town meetings on Iraq where some decorated Iraqi veterans and some retired generals, 3- and 4-star generals, are traveling around the country saying that this policy is unconscionable and has to stop. You know, there's an old political maxim. You can hope that a politician is going to see the light, but you can always count on them feeling the heat. And I think we have to turn up the heat in every conceivable way, targeting those members and insisting that those in Congress, Democrats in Congress, they may not have the votes to win, but we expect them to fight, and we don't expect them to roll over and compromise before that debate has even begun. And that's what we're getting. That's the signal we're getting from some of the Democratic leaders already.
Brian Becker, your group Answer, maybe a little less mainstream than Tom Andrews' Win Without War. Do you see your brothers and sisters in war opposition as sufficiently aggressive, let's say, in Tom Andrews' neck of the woods?
Well, I want to just speak affirmatively about what our new strategy is. And it's not just the Answer Coalition, but it's many Iraq War veterans, Veterans for Peace. Many organizations have come to the conclusion that protest, in fact, is not enough, that we have to intensify the level of resistance against the war machine as we see it. And I think it's important to just look a little bit at the history of how the Vietnam War ended. And that's what we're doing in terms of crafting a new strategy. The Vietnam War ended. The last U.S. soldiers came out in the early part of 1973, and yet Congress didn't vote to stop the authorization of funding for the war until 1974. In other words, Congress proved itself to be, even in the face of this very formidable, massive opposition at the time, not more really than a talk shop. And if, in fact, Congress isn't going to be the factor that brings the war to an end, and I'm convinced now that it will not be, that the people of this country have to take direct action in very large numbers with very intense kind of activity that upsets the social equilibrium such that it makes any government, whether it's led by the Democrats or the Republican, unable to ignore the sentiment of the people. In other words, where there's real social polarization based on the fact that the masses of people in this country, the vast majority, want the war to end now, and yet the Congress and the politicians are unable or unwilling to take responsibility for bringing it to an end.
I have to say, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Tom Andrews, do you expect this war to be ended in the streets with a massive disruption of the social equilibrium, as Brian Becker says?
You know, I think it's a combination, Tom. I think it's going to happen in the streets. It's going to happen.
Do you really? It hasn't yet. I mean, it was some kind of turnout on Washington, but this is nothing compared to the Vietnam era. So do you really think it's going to happen in the streets this time?
I'm saying that it's not an either-or proposition. It has to happen in the streets, but it also has to happen in studios such as this one. It has to happen in congressional offices. It has to happen in cities and towns all across this country. People have to mobilize and focus their efforts so that it's very, very clear. If members of Congress, and I think there is a very important role for Congress to play, number one, because this is where the debate is happening all across the United States, and we can turn the heat up. And secondly, Congress has the constitutional power to hold this president accountable, which they haven't exercised, and Congress has the constitutional power to end this war. They have the power of the purse. Congress, I don't think, has used that power. Obviously, it hasn't used that power, but it can. So I'm saying let's not exclude any option that we have before us to end this war. Let's use all of them and focus our energy and our strategies to create as much heat as possible across this country.
Let's take a call from Kyle in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Kyle, you're on the air, my friend.
Hi, Tom. I have a very brief thesis I'd like to give you, and then I'd like to hear the answers or discussion off the air.
Okay.
What I think is, I think the reason why the anti-war movement has failed thus far and is failing is because there's more of an anti-Bush movement than an anti-war movement. And what I mean by that is most of the heated rhetoric that you hear in opposition to the war is almost always just aimed at Bush lied, people died, this, that, and the other thing. We're only there for oil. I mean, things like this that really, if you sit down and you research and you use some common sense, they just don't make sense. So if you really want to get us out of there, then convince the Republicans of why you want to get us out of there, not just that this is a movement to bash Bush, because as long as Republicans see it as such, nobody's going to want to cooperate.
Kyle, do you think U.S. forces should get out, can get out, or not?
I think they definitely should get out. I don't want to see us there as long as we've been in Korea. But let's use common sense, too, and know that if you're an anti-war activist and you're concerned about life itself, you have to know if we pull out all at once tomorrow, you have to know the slaughter that's going to take place there. It's only common sense.
Yeah. Kyle, thanks very much. Right now, Jason is calling from Muscatine, Iowa. Hi, Jason. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Just a couple quick points. First off, the Democrats, and I'm speaking as an independent, but I usually vote Democrat.
Okay.
Makes a difference. The Democrats, frankly, promise too much. Granted, they've been out for a while. How could they know? But they have majority, but a simple majority isn't always enough to control the situation. But they made their bed, now they have to lie in it. I think what they need to do is, suck it in and say, yes, we promised too much. Still, they should go ahead and try to make good on the promises. Will they fail on some of the points? Absolutely. Second thing they need to do is not be afraid to do whatever it takes to get their message out. Right now, it seems like the Republicans, let's more honestly say the right, is controlling the message, and the Democrats are generally just saying, please don't hurt me.
But you want them to suck it up and say we promised more than we can deliver? Does that mean go along, get along with the president on the war?
Absolutely not. They should still dare. They should still try. Bible says if you want to save your life, you have to be willing to lose your life. Well, if they want to do the right thing, they have to be willing to not get rehired by the country next time their election comes up.
Jason, you're an independent. Do you want to see opposition in the streets, or does that seem like a throwback to Vietnam and a bad time to you? Good or bad to be in the streets?
I would absolutely love to see opposition in the streets. I honestly think it's happening. This last weekend, honestly can't remember the show, but show that's on our local NPR station, a protester was lamenting of the fact that he went to one of four protests. He said, honestly, haven't verified it myself, over 100,000 people of peace in Washington this year went to one of the protests, came home, and national, local, no media had it whatsoever, no mention whatsoever. So
you say maybe a little more of that would be good. Jason, in Muscatine, Iowa, thank you very much for your call. Brian Becker, Tom Andrews, please stand by. I want to bring one more voice into this conversation from Washington. Michael Crowley joins us. He's a senior editor for the New Republic. He wrote last week's New York Times Magazine story, Can Lobbyists Stop the War? Michael Crowley, thank you very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Glad to be here.
You've described maybe the main thrust of the anti-war movement as ensconced in K Street, down in Lobbyist Gulch in Washington, for this war, and raised some questions about whether or not that's an effective place for opposition to be. What conclusion did you come to?
Well, look, I think as this discussion has shown this morning, thus far it's not really getting the job done, and I think it's becoming very frustrating. I think there was a sense among the people that I reported on that you know, big things were happening several weeks ago when some Republican senators in particular were getting very nervous, and there was a possibility that, you know, the bottom was going to drop out, Pete Domenici, Richard Lugar, some folks like that, the kinds of moderates that these people who are kind of lobbying on the war, you know, as I argued in a sophisticated way, believe are essential to changing the course, having moderates go to the president and say, we can't be with you anymore. But it doesn't look like that's happening. And I found sort of, you know, as I was wrapping up, that more and more my conversations were turning towards 2008 and basically trying to throw people out of the Congress who had sustained the war. And I think that there are signs that that increasingly is the focus, that there's a recognition that it's not working, and you've really got to start changing the composition of the Congress and looking ahead to the next presidential administration.
Tom Andrews, maybe the reason that there's been with this more sophisticated, quote-unquote, approach to opposing the war is that people look back on Vietnam and said that led to so much division. It saddled Democrats with trouble on the national security image front for many years. Do you see anti-war protesters, perhaps like yourself, and do you see Democrats as afraid to be more confrontational in the streets this time? Does that look like a losing political strategy?
Well, first of all, Tom, I think we have to be willing to have the guts and tenacity, frankly, to take any strategy that we determine is going to be successful in moving this country out of this debacle and put it to work, whatever that is. I think the Democrats in Congress, as the caller had suggested earlier, I think they do have to get tougher. They do have to confront the manipulations and the deceptions that we've been hearing, including the manipulations and deceptions that we heard from the report from General Petraeus and Ambassador Crocker last week. They've got to take those on. I mean, the fact of the matter is, and he brings up some very good points, which I think have to be addressed. I mean, these old focused group researched words and phrases like precipitous withdrawal and leaving our young people on the, you know, in the desert of Baghdad without any support, or that we have to keep our military there in order to prevent a bloodbath. I mean, the reality is that the only solution to this debacle in Iraq is a political solution. And since we had the surge over the past several months, the political conditions necessary for reconciliation have actually deteriorated. But we didn't hear very much about that during the congressional
testimony.
So what I'm saying is we use every conceivable means at our disposal, including getting much tougher and getting, frankly, much tougher with the press. The press were not asking the kind of questions that needed to be asked to show and demonstrate to the public that what we were being sold in the grand theater of the Congress was, in fact, very different than the reality.
But, Tom, you know, I think groups like yours are taking some heat, in fact, from the left. I'm looking here at a big piece by Alexander Coburn in the New Left Review. He says that the anti-war movement has been kind of defanged, co-opted by getting too close to the Democratic Party this time. The Democratic Party has to think about, you know, polling results and elections rather than more immediate consequences. And this has ended up sort of neutralizing, undercutting the anti-war movement. Are you guys, you know, too deeply into the domestic politics this time and, I don't know, not enough at the rock face?
Well, I frankly don't think so. I mean, any tactic or strategy that we can use, we're going to use. Now, of course, the Democratic leaders have been attacked and criticized for being too close to us. And one of the things that they have to deal with is the criticism that the left of the party, the anti-war movement, is running the party. That certainly isn't the case either. We're putting pressure on everyone, including leaders. And when for example, I mean, Congressman Brian Baird announced a few weeks ago that he was going to reverse his position. He's going to support the war and started using the same rhetoric coming from the White House that, again, focus group say to use to attack what we're saying. And so we're going out to his district. We're going to have a number of activities there, and we're going to engage him directly. So whether it's Democrats flipping or Democrats in leadership not taking strong enough positions, you know, we're going to be all over him.
Michael Crowley, did you come away thinking that the anti-war movement, at least the piece you reported on there in K Street, the more sophisticated, you know, polished shoes end of it, is on the phone practically every day to the Democratic leadership, as you describe it, is too close to the Democrats? Has that become a problem for the movement?
Gosh, you know, I don't know what the answer to that is. The circumstances they face are so difficult. I mean, a president who has veto power and doesn't care, doesn't need to get reelected, is a really tough thing for a Congress, for a Democratic Congress with such slim numbers to overcome. And I'm familiar with the argument that Democrats could simply refuse to send Bush funding that does not include a timeline and basically kind of take the ball and go home with it if Bush won't play by their rules. But I've read persuasive arguments by sort of budget wonks that Bush will find the money somewhere in the vast federal budget, and we know how Bush sort of feels about, you know, kind of bending the rules to his whim in cases like this. And so that even if the Congress did this, it wouldn't necessarily force a major change. So I'm torn. They seem fairly effective to me, you know, within the limits they have. Just make one other quick point. You know, on people in the streets, there are two essential things to remember. One is that there's no draft, and so there's a real limit. You know, Tom Hayden, the 60s activist, I spoke to him, and he had a great phrase, you know, there's nothing like the existential dread of the draft to have people kind of rioting in the streets. That's just not there. And gas prices are up a little bit, but basically the economy has been pretty good. And also, you know, there has been a very conscious, I mean, the people I reported on did say they very consciously were nervous that about avoiding mistakes made in the 60s by these mass demonstrations that they feel, sort of with the benefit of historical perspective, did Richard Nixon a favor by allowing him to paint the anti-war movement as a bunch of kind of drug-addled crazies. And I'm not saying that that is what the anti-war movement was then or is now, but I'm just saying that there is a self-consciousness, a desire to avoid a sense of kind of anarchy in the streets that could essentially convince the, you know, maybe you would call it the silent majority that, boy, I don't really want to kind of cast my lot with these people. They're, you know, they're just a little too radical for me. So what they're trying now is something a little more inside, a little more out of view, and they hope a little more strategic. But it's obviously not working. The question is, you know, is it just that the context is almost impossible for them to turn things around given this president?
Brian Becker, how about it? Do you feel in your fellow anti-war leaders, maybe in different organizations, maybe more mainstream, that resistance to getting rowdy here, disrupting the social equilibrium as you describe it, do you think they've tilted too much toward the inside, out of view, strategic, or is that just the right way to go? Might you turn more voters against your position than you'd draw?
No, we're very confident in our strategy, and I think that people who are commenting on the anti-war movement and the mood of the people from sort of a distance, either at K Street or from an ivory tower, don't really recognize the fact, as we saw Saturday when so many thousands of people came, that it was Republicans, it was Democrats, it was people who formerly supported Bush, it was people who considered themselves conservative once and are now going through a political trajectory far different. I think the problem is that there's not an understanding that the mass of the population is deeply angry and frustrated and feels it has no real voice in Congress. And I think the real problem that we face as an anti-war movement is coming to a recognition of a certain reality. That is that the Democrats want to maneuver against Bush. They want to take advantage of the problem with the Iraq War, and Bush is slipping in the polls because of it in order to gain electoral advantage. But they don't want to assume responsibility for the withdrawal of American forces, which will be perceived as a defeat for the United States in a very strategic region of the world, as it was perceived during Southeast Asia. And I think the fact of the matter is the United States' so-called mission in Iraq has been defeated. There is no such thing as victory. And it's unconscionable to ask people in this country to send their sons and daughters to be killed or to shoot people they don't know so that politicians can avoid the perception of defeat.
But if
in
Democrats
a war that it should have never happened.
If they don't want to be associated with that, but everybody agrees troops have to come home sometime. Joe Biden saying over the weekend, you know, this is already our problem, he was saying, as in Democrats. He's presuming they're a Democrat in the White House next time. Who knows? But, I mean, if it's already the Democrats' problem, then what? You think they're never going to bring the troops home once they're in power?
That's right. I really believe that the Democratic Party establishment, which is cynically taking advantage of the anti-Bush sentiment because the war has gone so badly, once they take office, I believe they will continue the occupation of Iraq unless there is a sea change within the American people in the streets that would change the political climate such that neither party could really continue this war.
Let's take a couple calls from Nashville, Tennessee. Robert, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
I was just wanting to make a few points. I was recalled during the first Desert Storm in 91, and, you know, I would like to, you know, the media keeps redefining what victory is. 53,000 American soldiers were killed in Korea, and not to impugn the 4,000 people that have died during this war.
Nearly.
But, you know, I think the military deserves a pat on the back for that. We've chopped off hung their leader, you know, Saddam Hussein, defeated their military.
So are you pro-war this time, Robert? Never mind anti-war. Are you for it? Stick with it.
Well, I'm for, you know, victory in the sense of, you know, not being defined by the media, you know, helping these people. In 91, when we left there, Saddam Hussein, everybody see what he did then to all the Shiite Muslims there.
Robert, you say the media is taking away the victory word. It used to be on the backdrops when the president would make speeches. He doesn't put it up there anymore.
Well, you know, I look at Saddam Hussein getting hung, which he deserved. You know, there are three different factions over there fighting for power.
Yeah,
and
we hear that
I
support.
I kind of agree with Joe Biden as far as, you know, they may end up dividing that country up, but this has been no debacle as far as the military is concerned. You know, 53,000 people died in 3 years in the Korean War.
There's an argument. You know? It could be worse. Robert, thanks very much for calling. Michael Crowley, you know, do you see an anti-war movement making a difference in this? Or is the American political reality in a kind of box here that ultimately simply has to wait for perhaps another president? And, I mean, certainly another president, perhaps another party in the White House?
I think that might be right, ultimately. You know, I mentioned earlier how things looked to be trending earlier in the summer when some of these moderate Republicans were wavering. And these groups that I focused on, the Coalition Americans Against Escalation in Iraq, which is essentially sort of founded by MoveOn.org and also the Union SEIU, they spent the summer focusing very hard on Republicans exclusively. And you've heard the debate this morning about whether it's proper to focus on Democrats or Republicans. And they said, let's, you know, spend the summer trying to really push these Republicans into an uncomfortable place and force a break with the president in September. And it just didn't work. And some of the people they promised were going to be feeling this unbearable pressure.
Yep.
I guess I just didn't really see it. So Tom, I think what will be interesting to watch now is what role they play you know, in the Democratic presidential in the presidential campaign, influencing the Democrats and the Democratic you know, the congressional elections and how they sort of review the Democratic majority in 2008. In other words, I think at this point, their ability to actually change the course in Iraq, I think, now looks quite limited. And what will be interesting, given how much money a group like MoveOn.org, for instance, can throw around, what sort of pressures and demands will they be making of Democrats when we come to the next election? And, you know, just as one other note, I mean, people have hinted at this, but even someone like Barack Obama, who spent all last week in Iowa, I actually followed him around at several events, denouncing the war and saying it must end and so on and so forth, seems to be talking about leaving several tens of thousands of troops there for residual operations like training and fighting Al-Qaeda. So it is true this is going to be happening for a long time, and I think the question is, are the groups going to really crack down on Democrats who carry that line beyond 2008 and into
Well, there's the check-in for today. Michael Crowley at the New Republic, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Tom Andrews, National Director of Win Without War, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
And Brian Becker at the Answer Coalition. Brian, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.